This is Tidings, and I'm Hazel Kahn. My guest today is Gary English, founding artistic director of Connecticut Repertory Theatre and distinguished professor in dramatic arts at the University of Connecticut. More recently, he's been working as artistic director of the Freedom Theatre in Jenin Refugee Camp in Palestine's occupied West Bank. It's sometimes difficult to remember that Storrs, Connecticut, and Jenin, occupied West Bank, are on the same planet. And I'm really looking forward, Gary, to your telling us about the work you are doing with the Freedom Theatre in Palestine. So welcome to Tidings, Gary.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're going to need you to take us on a sort of quick journey through Middle East geography and history, so that we can understand exactly where the Freedom Theatre is and why it came into being. A sort of Google Earth tour, if you will, through time and space is what I was thinking.
Very good. Well, the Jenin refugee camp is populated by over 16,000 people, some 800 families, in an area that's about 1.6 square miles. It was founded as a refugee camp, I think, in 1952 by the United Nations Refugee Works Administration, or UNRWA, which was established specifically to deal with the Palestinian refugee crisis as a result of the 1948 war with Israel, or the so-called Nakba, or the disaster, as the Palestinians refer to it. They're mostly from Haifa City, or many of the villages around the surrounding area around Haifa, such as Ein Hod. They were pressed or pushed out of their villages during the 1948 war and settled in Jenin and then established into this camp in 1952. Many of the people who live in their homes in the camp, it's a very compressed, very congested kind of urban ghetto on the edge of the city of Jenin. And as a result, there are some interesting sociological differences between camp residents and the Jenin city residents, which, of course, have been there for many generations. Since 1952, of course, there's been something like four generations of people living in the refugee camp. So there are some families with as many as 800 people in them. So they're really almost like large clans that exist within this camp structure. Because it's administrated by UNRWA, it doesn't necessarily fall within the province of either Israel or the Palestinian Authority. So like all of the refugees in the diaspora, whether they're in the West Bank or Gaza or Syria, Lebanon, or elsewhere, they're essentially isolated non-state citizens, if you like, or non-state individuals and families with no significant political representation of any kind. The Jenin itself is in the northwest bank. It's very far in the north. It's probably less than an hour drive from Haifa, and it's 5 minutes from the concrete wall that separates the West Bank from Israel. So it's
the wall that Israel, the infamous wall that Israel has built and continues building.
Of course, yes. And interestingly, Jenin itself is of tremendous geopolitical importance in the conflict and relative to the occupation, because it is an arts center that is, because of the theater, because of Cinema Jenin, and because of the activities of Arna Mercamis and Giuliano Mercamis, it sort of holds the north, if you like, in terms of resistance through artistic activity.
So it's become an important artistic center, right? Since when?
Since the middle 90s. And actually, as a point of resistance, it goes all the way back to 1948, because there was a very famous battle in Jenin during the war, in which an Iraqi brigade, which had come to defend the Palestinian homeland, held their ground in sort of a holding action, a kind of almost like an Alamo-style action, in which the Israeli army was stopped from taking large chunks of the northwest bank. And since then, and including through the first intifada and then in the second intifada, Jenin has been known as a hotbed of resistance. So it's a very important point, because without Jenin, everything kind of collapses back to Nablus, which is to the south, and then to Ramallah, which is farther south. So it's a very important place geopolitically.
You were saying about Arna Merchamis and Giuliani. Could you sort of talk about them?
In the 90s, during the First Intifada, there was a woman named Arna Merchamis. Now, she was Jewish. She had actually been a member of the Palmach, which is one of the paramilitary groups that fought against the British during the British Mandate period before the war, and then fought, of course, with the Israeli Defense Force, what became the Israeli Defense Forces, the Haganah and the Stern Gang, during the 1948 war. She then later married a Palestinian communist named Merchamis and had several children, one of which was Giuliano. In the 90s, Arna, who had eventually come over to the side of the Palestinians, established a small arts center in Jenin known as the Stone Theater. And that theater and arts center was intended to work with the children of the camp to give them various means of expression in dealing with their psychological trauma, their suffering, and so forth, to give them an outlet for both the anger and the pain that they were experiencing during the 90s, during that period of the First Intifada. She then later died from cancer, but during that period, her son, Giuliano, who is a very famous Israeli Jewish Palestinian actor, because, of course, his mother was Jewish and his father was Palestinian, came and taught acting classes and handled kind of the theater portion of that art center. He then later came back towards the end of the Second Intifada at the invitation of two people, Jonathan Stanzak and Zachariah Zubaydi, to restart Arna's art center. And that's how the Freedom Theater itself was born in 2006. Both of these other persons are very important. Jonathan is actually Jewish, Swedish national, Israeli citizen, who came to Jenin specifically to seek out Zachariah Zubaydi to try to restart the theater. And Zachariah had been one of the children in Arna's Camp Art Center during the 90s. During Zachariah's young adulthood, because his mother had been killed by a sniper during the Second Intifada and two of his brothers had been killed, became eventually the commander of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Jenin and fought the Israelis during the famous Battle of Jenin in 2002. In 2006 or 7, then, they started the theater as an alternative to armed resistance to begin a different kind of campaign to consolidate Palestinian identity through the arts. And then Zachariah himself took a general amnesty, I think, in 2008, in which he laid down his arms and became nonviolent in his attempts to create the theater with his close friend Giuliano and with Jonathan. Where the theater is actually an old warehouse from the Ottoman railway system that became later the British Railway that ran through Jenin. In fact, the old train station is now a fruit stand a few blocks away from the theater. It had been kind of a storage facility, which then they took over from the UN and the British and eventually began to build the theater in 2006. That theater then still exists today, but of course in 2011, Giuliano himself was murdered outside the theater in the street on April 4th of 2011. So during the following year, the theater really struggled through its personal and trauma between all of the participants and employees of the theater. And there were serious problems and concerns about whether the theater could survive. And a couple of people really stepped up to take charge of the theater, most notably Jonathan, who had left the theater a year or so earlier, came back to become the general director. And Jacob Goff, who is Welsh from the UK, and had been a production manager at the theater, stayed on to try to keep the theater going. And then the two resident artists, two of the finest artists I've ever worked with, Nabil Al-Rai and his wife, Micaela Miranda, who's originally from Portugal. And the four of them really kind of sustained the theater during this year kind of transition between April of 2011 and fall of last year.
When you mentioned Arna, Giuliana's mother, there, for people who don't know and who might want to see, there's a wonderful film called Arna's Children, which talks about basically how the theater started, right?
It does. And there's also a really important message within the film itself. Giuliano said that the film was essentially about mothers and sons, because, of course, it's about himself and his mother. But it's also about a series of children who worked in the theater, who were child actors in the theater during the 90s, almost all of which were later killed during the Second Intifada. And so it's a sweet, poignant, and tragic film about these very young children. Interestingly, Giuliano had the presence of mind to shoot footage of these children when they were young, and then gradually as they got older and became adults. And of course, the change in their perspective is dramatic.
When Giuliano was murdered, to me, as an observer, that sent shockwaves, really international shockwaves. But also it brought this whole venture to people's, and the conflict to people's attention internationally, maybe more than it would have done. But it also, his death, his murderer has never been identified, but I know that one of the theories is that it was a Palestinian. And whether it was or not, maybe you could talk about that it's a manifestation of these differences that do exist within Palestine culture. We always think that the real conflicts are with Israel, but within Palestine, there are, and within Jenin, there are all kinds of ideological and other fissures, disagreements about violence, non-violence, national, international, and as you said, the refugee and the non-refugee cultures, the urban and the rural, and so on. So it's a very, very complex situation that you are dealing with when you're there.
It is, but I think the West sometimes makes too much of the so-called conflicts within Palestinian society as a way of justifying the Western's treatment of Palestinians as essentially a violent culture. I think that one of the myths is that Giuliano was killed as the result of his art. The West likes to think about Giuliano's murder as the person who was the artist struggling against violence, trying to establish a new wave of cultural significance, and then was killed by fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit of a gross oversimplification. And also, I think, something of a Western fantasy. There's at least as much evidence to suggest that either Israel or the Palestinian Authority were behind the killing of Giuliano as there was that there was any particular design to have him killed from some fundamentalist perspective. And so the theater threatened a lot of different kinds of people and a lot of different parts of the movement. And so the fact that there are divisions within the Palestinian society is basically no different than there are within any society. Mm. But when you take a society and crunch it down within the context of a brutal military occupation, you have to expect that there are going to be significant fissures within that society. You know, we're not talking about a balanced, stable society. We're talking about one which is compressed politically and militarily, economically, agriculturally, culturally, in every way that you can possibly imagine. Israel controls absolutely everything, from water to commerce to even the payments that go to the Palestinian Authority employees, from the taxes collected on behalf of the Palestinian Authority by Israel. And so it's sometimes easy for the West to think of Palestinian society in the same context that we think of other normal societies. But what we're really talking about is a society that's compressed into a brutal occupation, and then our standards don't necessarily apply.
Yes, I was actually going to ask you to talk a little bit more about the trauma, looking at it from a psychological point of view. I'm familiar with some of the work of Aid al-Sarraj.
Sure.
The psychologist. Could you talk about what you call compression, what it's like to live under occupation, not just occupation, but for 50, 60 years already of this occupation?
Right. Well, the West Bank and every region within the West Bank is itself a kind of collective prison. The Palestinians can't travel out of the West Bank without permission. Travel is restricted significantly for Palestinians. And then there are, of course, checkpoints within the West Bank itself. So there's one checkpoint, particularly, that's just east of Jerusalem called the Container. The nickname for it is the Container, which controls all of the traffic between the north and the south of the West Bank. And they can stop anybody at any time, search their cars, search them. The legal system, which allows for so-called administrative detention, allows the military to arrest any Palestinian pretty much any time they want. And they only have to justify it to a military tribunal behind closed doors without legal representation for the Palestinian, or even the Palestinian being, or his member, family members being present. From a basic psychological perspective, the West Bank functions essentially as a kind of collective prison.
Gary English is talking about his work as artistic director of the Freedom Theatre in Jenin refugee camp in Palestine's occupied West Bank. This is Hazel Khan on WPKN.
PTSD, the whole population is probably suffering from one form or other of post-traumatic stress disorder.
The actors of the Freedom Theater describe themselves as the children of the Second Intifada because they grew up during the Second Intifada. And every single one of them has a story. You know, one was beaten and lost a spleen when he was 13. One was ordered out of his house and commanded to go back in his house and ordered to go out of his house. Another one watched his father die in the street from a relatively minor flesh wound because no one dared go near him to help him because they might get shot by a sniper. There were dogs sniffing around the front porch of their home where he died. Every single person has a similar story.
And if the father didn't die, the children saw him humiliated, which is bad
yes.
enough in any culture, but in Palestinian culture, I think it's particularly painful.
Well, Siraj talks about several different specific things that cause the massive levels of PTSD in the refugee population and within the Palestinian population in general. Particularly, he refers to home destructions, random bombings, random arrests. And in particular, he refers to the beating of the father, the humiliation of the father in front of the family, which disassociates the paternal figure from the family. He also talks about some of the most serious PTSD cases are in the instances where the father has been humiliated and disassociated from the family emotionally, arrested, sometimes spending years in prison. And the mother, often, if it's an educated mother particularly, there's this kind of schism between the parents in terms of how they treat the child. The father may be aloof, the mother may be overbearing. And there's this psychological friction and this constant lack of stability about anything being something that they can rely on. One of the first images in Arna's Children shows a young child, Ala, when he was about 10 years old, sitting on the ruins of his house in Jenin with his hands shaking. And of course, if you flash forward in that film, you see Ala as a young man, as the leader of the combat group that's fighting the Israelis in Jenin. And so one of the really important images and messages of Arna's Children is watching how these traumatized children grow up in this very violent atmosphere, and then, of course, what happens to them. And I think most Americans particularly would understand that very well. Picture yourself in Texas or in Arizona or in some place where you yourself are removed from your home, and you watch your home destroyed, and you watch your father beaten, and your mother's killed by a sniper. I mean, I don't know any of us that wouldn't be returned into resistance fighters under those circumstances.
But what role does let's bring back the theater into all of this, and the kinds of ways that you use drama and theater?
What we do know is that drama is both a collective activity and an individual activity. And because it's a creative activity as well, there are sort of three aspects of it that are immediately healing, right? The fact that it's a group activity makes it healing because you're connected with other people. The fact that it's based in creativity is in itself, creativity is in itself a healing activity. But one of the things that's important to make a distinction is the difference between the making of theater and the application of drama therapy. The theater, of course, does both. We're interested in making theater that is political, that points to the effect of the military occupation on Palestinians, that insists on the Palestinian identity and tries to extend that into an international, more humanistic image of Palestinians. But it also then does function as a kind of therapeutic environment in which Palestinians can learn essentially to be themselves, that by coming into the arts, an individual discovers who they are. It's a personal transformation. It's a personal journey in which you yourself discover the limits of your personality, the depth of your feelings, because it's our emotional life and our experience. It's the raw material of our work. So the theater functions on several levels in that spectrum. Some people in the West, again, think of artistic resistance as an alternative to armed resistance, and I think that's a reasonable way to think about it. But I also think it's important for people to understand that artistic resistance is not just intended to be a substitute for something else. It is in of itself a way to explain resistance. It explains the realities of life under occupation. It explains, indeed, the purpose of political resistance. And as I said the other night, one of the real important features of the Freedom Theater is that individual freedom of expression, individuality is in some ways a prerequisite to political agency.
And the Freedom Bus and the Playback Theater, is that the same thing or is that something different?
Playback Theater itself is a methodology that is designed to deal with the trauma within communities by bringing communities together and training a group of actors in various improvisational forms. The theater company, the playback company, asks communities to come forward with their individual stories. And then as these stories are revealed to both the community and the actors themselves improv the story itself. They literally play back the story of the individual to the community, which not only gives the victim within the community a voice within the community, but it also allows the victim or the client to basically project their story into a fictionalized a version of that story, allowing them some distance and perspective.
To see it played back to them.
Exactly. And that also then is a process that allows the individual to witness the effects of their story, for the community to witness the story without necessarily re-traumatizing them. That's another aspect of drama therapy, which is that you try to create a fiction on which you project your story so as to provide some sense of distance between the two.
And do the actors go out to the villages to outside Jenin, or does it all take place in Jenin?
Oh, no. Most of the playback performances are around the West Bank in areas as remote as the South Hills of Hebron, or Kal Ahmar, which is a Bedouin community outside of Jerusalem and Jericho, Nabusala, all of the various villages in the north and the south of the West Bank. And last fall, the Freedom Ride, and this last spring, again in late March, the Freedom Bus toured for several days, doing as many as, I think, 8 or 10 performances last fall across the West Bank.
I'd like to spend the last few minutes actually focusing back onto you, if we could. I'd like to know how you came to all of this. And you're going back, you've actually been living in Jenin for the last year or so. Could you just talk about all of that? And also, get all my questions in first. What is it like just to be doing this in the complexity of this, of anything but benign occupation? Also, how do you travel? I mean, do the Israelis give you a visa? May not need a visa, but do you go straight from Tel Aviv or do you go through Amman? And also, have you, as an academic, have you had any problems with political conflicts or any opposition to your work in the Freedom Theater?
That's a lot of questions. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let me start with, I first went to the Freedom Theater in the summer of 2010 as basically a visitor to simply observe their work. I met the principal players within the company at that time, and I went originally to spend a few days just to see the work and to specifically talk to Nabil Al-Rai about he and Mikaela's production of Animal Farm, which was a very interesting production that got a lot of international press in 2009. And I ended up staying over 2 weeks because I just fell in love with the place and continued to write research grants to basically do interviews of all the major Palestinian artists within the West Bank that I could get in contact with to develop a kind of history of theater, political theater in the West Bank since 2002. So I went back and forth, I think, 6 times in the next 2 years and developed a relationship with a couple of theaters in the West Bank. And then after Giuliano's murder, there was this, again, year kind of hiatus in which Nabil and Mikaela and Jonathan kind of hold the theater together. And Nabil and Mikaela directed a production called Shokiman, which is Arabic for What's Next, that they toured in Europe. And then there was some discussion that it might be useful for me to come in as a consultant for a year to help kind of build an artistic infrastructure for the theater. And so I obtained a leave from the University of Connecticut and went to Janine again last May. I went back and forth for a few months and have been living there more or less since then.
And are you going back?
I am. I'm going back, and I'll be going to Sweden on the 27th for a tour of our current production, The Island, which I directed in March, in Janine. And The Island is an interesting play from a South African playwright about the prison that on Robben Island that Nelson Mandela was in for 27 years. We opened that production in March, and we're taking it to Sweden in late April. So I'm going to Sweden from here and then back to Janine for at least two more months, May and June. My current contract with the Freedom Theater is up at the end of June.
And then you're bringing The Island to the U.S., right?
Hmm? Yeah, we intend to tour it in the fall. We have dates in both New York and throughout New England. We're also developing a tour date at Georgetown University, which we hope will come to pass in September. And we're planning between 7 and 10 performances in the New York, Washington, New England area.
If people want to be in touch with your website, what could you say what that is?
Yeah, it's www.thefreedomtheatre.org. And you have to remember to put the in front of Freedom Theater or you get a theater in Philadelphia.
And you have to remember to spell it the English way.
Right, R-E, yes. In terms of working within the theater, it's been a tremendously in-depth experience for me. I still consider myself fundamentally a guest, as I help the theater in any way that I can. I travel into the area with an Israeli visa, which is a three-month travel visa. So I have to go in and out every 3 months.
But you have an American passport.
I travel on an American passport. Yeah.
And have you had any opposition to your work from within the university or from within just the country?
No, the University of Connecticut has been tremendously supportive in the work that I do there. And they view very appropriately this as essentially, an expression of freedom of expression through academic freedom. It is, my work is essentially artistic and research oriented. I consider myself an analyst, not an activist on that level. And so the work that I do is intended to reveal the story of the work. And so, no, I have not experienced a significant opposition to my work at all.
I get the feeling you think of it as a, not exactly lifelong, but that you would like this to go on for a long time. Or am I wrong?
No, I hope to have a relationship both with the Freedom Theater and with Palestinian Theater for as long as I'm able. I find the work extremely vital artistically, and I find the actors and the storytellers and the artists in Palestine to be particularly adroit and skillful in their work. I think it's a very rich landscape of theater, and I consider myself very privileged to participate in it.
Are you able to do this in English, or do you speak Arabic? Are you learning Arabic?
I'm trying to learn Arabic. Sadly, I don't learn it as quickly or as well as I would like. Most of the people that I work with in Palestine speak English. I think they would suggest that I should work harder at my Arabic, which I think is certainly the case. And if I were to spend any more significant time there, it would be really important, if not necessary, for me to be more fluent.
Thank you very much, Gary. This is really interesting. It's really valuable what's going on, really important for people to know about it.
Thank you very much.
This is Tidings from Hazel Kahn. You heard Gary English talking about his work as artistic director of the Freedom Theatre in Janine refugee camp in Palestine's occupied West Bank. This interview was conducted over Skype. Tidings is heard on the second Wednesday of each month at 7:30 p.m. and archived at hazelkahn.com. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.